Okay, so we want to pick up at September 8th, 1905. True charity or true love is to do good to one's neighbour because he's an image of God. Now notice that the heading says that the intention with which you love somebody is extremely important. As I was in my usual state, Blessed Jesus came for just a little and he told me, my daughter, true charity or true love is when in doing good to one's neighbour, one does it because that person is my image. That is Genesis 1:27. Made in the image of God. And Romans 8:29, we become images of Christ. Genesis 1:27 and Romans 8:29. All the charity or love that goes out of this sphere cannot be called charity. If the soul wants the merit of charity, she must never go out of this sphere of looking at my image in everything. Now, since we're on volume 6, you will have already heard Louisa interceding for the mitigation of chastisements, and she'd say, they are your images. She'd actually say those words. Okay. It's so true that true charity consists in this, that my very charity never goes out of this sphere. I only love the human creature because she's in my image. And if by sin she deforms this image of mine, I no longer feel like loving her. On the contrary, I abhor her. And I only preserve plants and animals because they serve my images. And the soul must modify all of herself on the example of her creator. You see, we can have a motivation that we will be nice to someone because they're related to us or they're our friend or we like them. Now, Jesus is saying for someone in the divine will, that's not acceptable. You must love everyone you meet on the same level that this person has been created in the image of God. And that would change your attitude to lots of people. Okay. I remember a person saying to me once that she was walking up to Holy Communion one Sunday morning and all of a sudden the Lord said, stop. Sit down. And she was completely shocked. And she sat down and she said, Lord, what have I done? And he said, you hate someone I love. And she said, me. And so the Lord gave her the name, and it was the name of a politician. Okay, and she said, he or she, they're only a politician. He said, that person was created in my image and I paid for their redemption. Do you mind? If you don't want to change your attitude to that person, he said, don't come up for communion because you're not in communion with me. Now, he could only say that to somebody who was walking a serious spiritual life because nobody else would understand, would they? But he said it to her very strongly. And I only know it because she told me in her shock. And I said, yeah, I'm going to tell that story, but not indicating who it is, okay? And if we love everybody because they are made in the image of God and that God's own love and grace is flowing into them and that Jesus paid fully for their redemption, it would change the way we relate to them, wouldn't it? And we would have respect and honour for everybody, whether they deserved it or not. Okay. So September the 17th, 1905, how we can participate in the sorrows of our Blessed Mother. This is very good. Having been in much suffering because of the privation of my most sweet Jesus, this morning, the day of Our Lady of Sorrows was come. After I struggled in some way, he came and told me, my daughter, what do you want that you so much yearn for me? And Louisa said, Lord, what you have for yourself, that is that I yearn for myself. And he said, my daughter, for myself I have thorns, nails and cross. And Louisa said, well then, that's what I want for myself. And he gave me his crown of thorns and shared with me the pains of the cross. Now you see there that true love wants identification with the beloved. That's real love. Unfortunately, many people today enter into what they call a marriage bond, and all they're looking for is for the other person to satisfy their needs. Does that make sense? That's not marriage. Marriage is a going out of oneself to another person to give them life. Because that's what love is. And that kind of love, if it was reciprocated, would make an incredible sign on the earth. Absolutely incredible. Okay. So there's Louisa looking for identification, and Jesus said, all I have are nails and cross. And she said, right, I'll have them. Notice her bravery. She doesn't pull back from this. Then he added, everyone can share in the merits and in the goods produced by the sorrows of my mother. One who in advance places herself in the hands of Providence, offering herself to suffer any kinds of pains, misery, illnesses, calumnies, and everything which the Lord will dispose for her, comes to participate in the first sorrow of the prophecy of Simeon. Now, can I read that again so you know the standard? In case you think you're on the rung of the letter. Anyone, he said, who in advance places herself in the hands of Providence, offering herself to suffer any kind of pains, miseries, illnesses, calumnies, and everything which the Lord will dispose for her, comes to participate in the first sorrow of our Blessed Mother. There are six more. How are you doing? I'm already gone. Don't know about you. Okay. One who actually finds herself amid sufferings and is resigned, clings more tightly to me and does not offend me. It is as if she were saving me from the hands of Herod, keeping me safe and sound within the Egypt of her heart, and she participates in the second sorrow. You probably have managed that a little bit, have you? One who feels downhearted, dry, and deprived of my presence, and remains yet firm and faithful to her usual practices, even more she takes the opportunity to love me and to search for me more without tiring, comes to participate in the merits and goods which my mother acquired when I was lost. One who, in any circumstances she encounters, especially in seeing me gravely offended, despised, trampled upon, tries to repair me, to compassionate me, and to pray for the very ones who offend me, it is as if I encountered that soul, the soul of my mother, who, if she could have done it, would have freed me from my enemies. And she participates in the fourth sorrow. One who crucifies her senses for love of my crucifixion and tries to copy the virtues of my crucifixion within herself participates in the fifth sorrow. One who is in a continuous attitude of adoring and kissing my wounds, repairing and thanking me in the name of all mankind, it is as if she were holding me in her arms, just as my mother held me when I was deposed from the cross, she participates in the sixth sorrow. One who remains in my grace and corresponds to it, giving a place to no one else but me in her heart, it is as if she buried me in the center of her heart, and she participates in the seventh sorrow. Now give yourself marks 1 to 10 for each one of them. Okay, and then you'll know how far you've got in this thing. Because it's only when Jesus will give something like that that you realise the standard is incredibly high, isn't it? And we're inclined to let ourselves off the hook an awful lot easier than that. If it's any help to you, when I've read that, I give myself 0 out of 10 for the whole 7 of them. I don't know about you. And I just said, Lord, you know, I'm a miserable one. I've got to start at the beginning. Because you might as well be truthful about it and not pretend that we're somewhere where we're not, you know. So October the 10th, 1905. The sign that the soul is perfectly clasped and united with Jesus is that she is united with all neighbours. Now, the little word there that is difficult is the word all. Okay, we're all united to some neighbours. Okay. And of course, neighbour means every human being on the planet. It doesn't just mean the ones living next door to you. While I was very afflicted because of the struggles that blessed Jesus made me suffer in waiting for him this morning, making himself seen for just a little, he told me, "My daughter, I feel sorry for the sorrow and for seeing you as though immersed in bitter affliction because of my privation. I feel such pain because of your affliction, especially since it is because of me. And I feel as if it were my own." Now, most people looking at that would say, but you're the very one who could stop it. All you've got to do is go back to Louisa and everything is hunky-dory. Okay. What are you doing standing back saying that you also are suffering? Now, I'm trying to give you a way of helping you to examine the text and to ask questions. Those of you who will join the Divine Will family, you will be taught how to ask the right questions of the text, and then all of a sudden the text opens up to you. Okay. Because sometimes we're inclined to just take it and keep moving, you know, instead of stopping and saying, but he could have changed that. Why didn't he change it? Because if you ask that question, then you can go searching for an answer. But if you don't ask the question, you can't go searching for an answer because there isn't a question in your head. Do you see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So you will be taught how to ask the questions. So I feel as if it were my own, and it is so great that if all the afflictions of others were united together, they would not give me as much pain as yours alone. Because Louisa wants him more than all the other people on the planet. For it is only because of me. Therefore, would you show me your cheerful face and make me see that you are content? Huh? Do you get it? Yeah. He's saying, you're causing me pain, so would you ever put a smile on your face and stop increasing my pain? He said, but excuse me, Lord, I just told you that you're the cause of it and you could solve it. But he's the husband that won't accept that. I know you don't have husbands like that. You have great ones. 2 Corinthians 9:7. 2 Corinthians 9:7. Okay. Show me your cheerful face. No, 2 Corinthians 9:7 is God only loves cheerful givers. He doesn't like sad saints at all. And then he clasped himself tightly with me and said, the sign that the soul is perfectly clasped and united to me is that she is united with all of her neighbours. Oops. Now notice he's changed the subject. That's Proverbs 15:13. Just as no clashing or disordered notes must exist with those who are visible on the earth, so no clashing note of disunion exists with the invisible God. John 15:9, there must be total love. Jesus said in John 15:9, as the Father has loved me, so in the same way I love you. And because of that, this is the way you must love one another, with divine love. That's what he was saying in John 15:9. Now notice the issue of Lord, you're causing me pain by your privation wasn't answered. Okay? And the reason for that is that Jesus has answered it many times before now, that he's away chastising. And sometimes she really comes up to the mark and she's able to offer it and all the rest of it, but then she falls back into her usual thing. It's very like us, isn't it? That one day we do the right thing and all the rest. And then a week later we say, oh my God, I've forgotten all about it. You're not like that, you're not. Okay, so welcome to the human race. October 12, 1905. The knowledge of self empties the soul of herself and fills her with God. Put a VIP on this. This is extremely important. Whether you're in the divine will or whether you're in ordinary spirituality, this is extremely important. The scriptures tell us that knowledge of self is the first step on the ladder. Okay, let me illustrate knowledge of self. supposing all of us were living in community, and I was one of these touchy porcupines that you couldn't say boo to a goose to because she'd react every time. What happens is that all of you are suffering from that, isn't that right? And you're all having to mind your P's and Q's. Now, the only person in the entire group who needs the information is me. And if I get the information in such a way that I begin to take on board that I'm causing all of you pain and struggle because of my reactions, then that's the stimulus for me to change. Do you get it?
No.
That's self-knowledge, that you actually come to understand something that you're doing, how it's affecting others. Okay. And if you ever get to the stage of going to confession and saying, I did such and such because, it's the because is extremely important. I did it for this reason. Because the priest is used to hearing people saying I did or said such and such thing or whatever, but he's not used to somebody having the self-knowledge to say I did it because. Then he knows how to advise me because he knows what's behind it. Do you see what I'm saying? And he can help me to eradicate it completely. If I say I said something nasty to this neighbour here because I wanted to get my own back on him, he has hurt me, then the priest knows that my sin is revenge. Do you see the problem?
Yes.
It's the because that made the difference. I wanted to give him a piece of my mind. That means I want to get even. That's revenge. Okay. So if he knows the sin is revenge, it's not what I would have confessed if I didn't tell him that. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes.
If I merely said, I said words I shouldn't say, the priest isn't hearing that this person has committed a sin called revenge, which is a serious sin. Okay. And that's why what I call the because is actually very important. Okay. So this is knowledge of self. This is a very important thing. Continuing in my usual state, blessed Jesus came for just a little and he told me, my daughter, the knowledge of self empties the soul of herself and fills her with God. Because when we realize that something, some attitude that we have or some reaction that we have is not only damaging to others, it's also damaging to yourself. And that is the stimulus that makes you convert to love. And the first thing that happens to you is that you go into humility. Now, to really walk in the divine will, you've got to go way beyond humility into nothingness. I think it's the most brilliant thing in the divine will, that just go into your nothingness, because that leaves the Lord completely free. Okay. And so the knowledge of self empties the soul of herself and fills herself with God. Now, self-knowledge also enables you to be truly repentant. And Jesus will tell you in these writings that there are people going to confession who are not repentant and therefore the absolution isn't valid. Because they know they're going to go back and do what they did. So they're not really repentant. Not only this, but in the soul, there are many receptacles and everything that can be seen in the world takes its place in these receptacles. Something more, something less, according to the concept of them that she makes for herself. That's what you call internalizing worldly stuff. Okay. Now, the soul who knows herself is filled with God, knowing that she is a nothing, or rather a fragile, rotten and stinking vase, is well wary of letting more filthy rot enter into her interior, which is the things that can be seen in the world. So beside that, I want you to put Psalm 8. Lord, what is man that you would even be mindful of him, or the son of man that you would care for him? And yet you've made him a little less than a god and crowned him with glory and honor. So what you're being told here is that as we enter more and more into self-knowledge, we become more and more wary of damage that can come to us from the world, from outside. One who had a rotten wound and kept gathering more rot to put in the wound would be quite crazy, right? Now, the knowledge of self brings with it the knowledge of the things of the world, and therefore how everything is vanity and fleetingness, goods that are only masked, deceits, inconstancy of the creature. Now, you know the beginning of the book of Ecclesiastes, vanity of vanities and all is vanities. So that's Eccles 1:1, Ecclesiastes chapter 1 and verse 1, vanity of vanities and all is vanity. So knowing how things are in themselves, she's well aware of letting them enter into herself, and so all these receptacles remain filled with the virtues and God. Ephesians 4:7 and Romans 8:20. Now it's at this point that a person becomes very attentive. If you know the damage that a particular sin has done to you and to others, you'll be very attentive in the future, and watch that space, as we say. Okay. So October 16th, 1905. The closer the soul draws to the love of God, the more she loses her own virtues. Now, one of the many myriad problems we have in the world is that people tell you to assert yourself and to sell yourself. And if you have something, flaunted before the world. In other words, you are advertising yourself, you're praising yourself, you're glorifying yourself in front of the world, okay? And whatever your advantages or features are, that's what you actually project onto other people. It's the exact opposite in the spiritual life. That's why a truly worldly person and a truly spiritual person have no conversation in common. They're actually operating on exactly opposite principles. And the worldly person will get it rather quickly that they can't communicate with you. Okay. And the person trying to live the spiritual life will have the experience that I don't know how to communicate with this person. Have you ever had that?
Yes.
I don't have words that this person would understand. Now, that's very common for anyone trying to live a spiritual life. That means you're on completely different platforms, operating on entirely different principles, and there is nothing to bridge the gulf. All you can do for that person is pray and intercede and do penance for them. There's not another thing you can do. So now we're going to get the most wonderful dissertation about love. This is the triumph of love. So the whole 36 volumes is divine will and love. Okay. So Louisa says, having read a book which dealt with the virtues, I was concerned in looking at myself, for I could see no virtue in me. Now, Louisa has been trained by Jesus not to look at herself, to only look at him. And if you want to make progress, look at him. And if something in you needs to change, he'll tell you. He'll make it obvious, or he'll get one of God's little helpers to come and tell you, except that they won't tell you as nicely as he would. And they love multiplying it by 10. You always do this, or you never do that. You've never had anything like that, you haven't. No. God's little helpers multiply it. So all you have to do is they take the kernel and give them the division or the multiplication. Okay, when God does it, he does it so delicately that you're in danger of not hearing it. Because God is refined love. Human beings aren't. So there was Louisa, and she couldn't find any virtue in herself because she's been trained to look at God. Now, you need to know the environment she's in. It's 1905. It's more than a century ago. And in the church, particularly in religious life, it was terribly important that you practice virtue. And that was so up to recent times as well. I remember somebody who didn't like me telling me that she was practicing charity on me. It's how to feel nice in one easy lesson. I told her if she didn't scooch, I'd be practicing murder on her. Human beings have a most extraordinary form of communication. We use the sword all the time. Do you know what I mean? We don't use the kid gloves. And only the divine hand can actually teach us how to use kid gloves dealing with people, because they're just as wounded as we are. Do you know what I mean? But in those days, you know, you practiced charity. Therefore, you found somebody you didn't like, and you practiced charity on them. And you found somebody that irritated you like hell, and you practiced patience on them. This was called getting the virtues. I would think it was getting insanity, but never mind. Anyway, so Louise is reading this kind of stuff in a book, okay? And she says, God, I haven't any virtues. I don't think like that. And anyway, she hasn't any neighbours to bump into. She's in a bed. So if it wasn't that I just want to love Jesus and that I want him, that I love him and I want to be loved by blessed Jesus, nothing of God would exist in me. Now, she doesn't know, you see, that she's hit the jackpot. This is the centre. This is it. And these others that are talking about various virtues don't know what she's talking about. So now, as I was in my usual state, that means of ecstasy, my adorable Jesus told me, my daughter, the closer the soul comes to the end, what's the end? So as to draw near the fount of every good, which is the true and perfect love of God. That means the end is the height of the spiritual life. You come to the summit of the spiritual life. In these writings, the height of sanctity is what we would call the summit of sanctity, like the summit of a mountain. Okay. So, which is true and perfect love of God, in which everything will remain submerged and love alone will float. Now, that's exactly where Louisa is, and she doesn't realise it. So on one side, you need to put Ephesians 3, 16 to 21, growing and in love. And on the other side, Deuteronomy 6, 4 to 10, loving God. I suppose I should give you Matthew 22. Now, what are the verses? Can't remember the verses, but Jesus said that loving God and your neighbour, the entire scripture hangs on those two laws. Remember? So it's in Matthew 22. Yeah. And it won't be hard to find because it's one of the major themes in Matthew 10, 20. It should be after verse 20, I think. So everything is submerged and love alone will float. In other words, the only thing that's the issue then is love. To be the engine of everything. So that means love is the motivation for everything. The more she loses all the virtues she has practiced along the journey, that means that you're no longer aware of the fact that you're being patient or that you're being kind or that you're being humble or that you're being this, that and the other, because you're not concentrating on that. You're concentrating on the essence of the thing. That's like saying someone is in for the Olympic gold medal and they keep their eyes on the goal. They're not looking at anything before that. The ones who look at things before that are not going to get there. Okay. So she loses or forgets all of that stuff. To enclose everything in love. That's your 1 Corinthians 14:1. You must want love more than anything else. And she rests from everything. That means all your struggles about being patient and kind and all the rest of it, they all rest to love only. John 14:1. So in other words, when you get to the heights of the spiritual life, there's only one issue. And it's love, because God is love. And if I can use Ryanair language, when you get on the ship to go home, you can only take hand baggage. And the hand baggage has L-O-V-E on it. Anything else weighs too much. Even the human virtues weigh too much. The only thing that can be airborne is love. The only thing that gets into heaven is love, because heaven is all about love. Okay. So all the things that we find difficult down here are all opportunities for us to conquer love. Okay. And so all the wrong people ask you to help them. Do you know what I mean? And all the people you find difficult, and that's for you to conquer yourself and to let love be the dominant. So do the blessed in heaven not lose anything, everything to love? In the same way, the more she advances, she is the soul, the less she feels the varied crafting of the virtues, because she's no longer struggling to be patient and kind. Because investing them all, love converts them all into itself, keeping them at rest within itself, like many noble princesses working itself alone and giving life to them all. And while the soul does not perceive them, in love she finds them all, but more beautiful, more pure, more perfect, more ennobled, because they are fed from the noblest source, which is divine love. And if she does perceive them, it's a sign that they are separated from love. He says, if you still notice that you're practicing patience, then you haven't got to this stage, because if you were at that stage, patience would be drawn up into love. And you would say to someone, I'm not being patient, I'm just loving them. I'm not being kind, I'm just loving them. I'm not being humble, I'm just loving them. Because everything becomes love. And since God is love, that's where the whole spiritual life is going. That's the most beautiful summary of the journey of the spiritual life. So he gives us an example. A soul receives a command and she exercises obedience to obey the person in order to acquire the virtue, to sacrifice her own will, and for many other reasons. Now, by doing so, she already perceives that she's exercising obedience. She feels the toil and the sacrifice that this virtue brings with itself. Another then obeys not to obey the person, not for other reasons, but knowing that God would be displeased by her disobedience, she looks at God in the one who commands her, and for the love of him, she sacrifices herself and obeys. This is a very, very good example, summary, I should say, of the life of St. Thérèse of Lisieux in the convent. All her obedience was love. Everything she did for love. So the second one is not obeying to practice the virtue of obedience. They're obeying to love God. So in this, the soul does not perceive that she obeys, but only that she loves, because she has obeyed only out of love. Otherwise, she would have disobeyed anyway, and so with all the rest. Therefore, courage along the journey, because the more you move forward, the sooner you will enjoy in advance, and also down here means on earth, the eternal beatitude of soul and true love. In other words, you will already experience heaven on earth. And the difference between heaven and earth when you arrive at this summit of love is that you can still merit, and the folks in heaven can no longer merit because their journey is finished. And because your journey is not finished, you can actually grow greater than them. It's amazing. So October the 18th, 1905, everything is in increasing love and remaining close to Jesus. So big heading, love is everything. Love is the issue. This morning, as I was in my usual state, Jesus came all of a sudden and told me, my daughter, what foolishness. Even in holy things, they think of how to content themselves. Now, I don't know if you have an example, but I've given retreats for 40 years. And it's a PhD in how human beings are. And I would bring all these holy people to a retreat house in different countries, not just this one. And all these people coming full of religion and full of holiness and wanting to grow in holiness and everything, they want the best rooms. They complain handsomely if there aren't all the gadgets and everything that they expect in the room. Will they shift a room to help somebody who has actually got a need? No, I paid for it. They come down to the dining room. They want the best food. They want total variety. They complain if the portions aren't big enough. I remember one gentleman, I understand he was bigger than me, okay, and he was sitting beside me at the table and he complained that the portions weren't big enough. I said, God, you should have sat beside me. you would have had at least 1.5 dinners every day. I said, you complained to the wrong person. God doesn't supply the dinners. I said, I could have done something about it. This is too late. Keep your complaint to yourself. They want the front seats in the synagogue. And they want the best seats. And they still want spirituality. And they still want to grow in holiness. And they don't know they're blocking it with every move they make. And if I tell them we're going to have a day of fasting, we paid. So the only way I ever got them to fast was to do an all-night vigil, in which they weren't fasting at all, but at least they were fasting from bed. Now, you learn a lot when you give retreats to the human beings, learn a lot. And the main thing you learn is that while we say we want God, we want him on a cushion. We don't want him at a price. Now, the people who are going to get places are the ones who will take him at a price, like Louisa. If the only thing you have are nails and a cross, I'll have them. Maximilian Kolbe was told by our Blessed Mother he could have two crowns. One was the crown of purity and holiness in the priesthood, and the other was the crown of martyrdom. He said, I'll have the two. Wow. He was only 6. And he got the two.
Yes.
It's the people who really, really want God. And I haven't yet seen the holy people in Ireland really, really want God. They want him and... Now, I'm not looking at you or anything. You just happen to be in front of me. It applies to every single one of us in the country. Because if all of us wanted God at any cost... we turn back the tide of evil overnight. So something major still has to happen to us. And I wouldn't have said it, only it came up here. But you see, the wonderful thing about this text is it allows me to say a lot. You know, so even in holy things, they want to content themselves. I remember in one particular retreat in another country, so you're off the hook, when I really had to ask a religious sister to please cooperate in the way we were praying. She would run ahead of everybody else, and there was no way she would just pray in harmony with us. You know what she did? Got up, walked out, left the retreat. I said, that woman has a vow of obedience. God help her superior. Would not... oh, never mind. But I did want to illustrate this in case you think that it wasn't a serious thing that he was saying. Because our problem is that we want it too easy. I remember the very first seminar that Tony Hickey gave in my house on divine will, and we were all as green as grass, okay, about divine will. And the first chance he got, you know, for us to have questions and everything, he said, has anybody got questions? And one hand shot up, and the question was, is there a shortcut? You see, that's us. We want to get there without paying the price. We want to get on the train and have the journey, but we don't want to pay the ticket. And that actually makes the difference between saints and people who don't become saints. So that's what he says here. My daughter, what foolishness. Even in holy things, they think of how to content themselves. If in holy things they make me flee, where shall I find a place in the actions of my human creatures? What a mistake. When everything is in anticipating the actions of love, everything is in loving God and loving your neighbour. Jesus said it, the whole law and the prophets hangs on it. In executing these actions and in gathering as many things as possible in order to increase love, that's your Ephesians 3 text again, and remaining very close to me to drink at the spring of my love and to immerse oneself completely in my love. What a blunder, he said. They do everything differently. Now, this was said in 1905, so it wasn't actually written entirely for you. It was written for human beings who think that they're seeking God, and in actual fact, they're seeking themselves. Isn't it sad? Yeah. I remember having a terrible experience in a church in Canada. I was giving a retreat in the parish, so I was the invited speaker, and so I used to go into the church early in the morning when the church was empty. That's when I love churches, when they're empty, to have my prayer time with the Lord. And there I was, giving all my attention to the Lord, and I just sat wherever I sat. I mean, the church was empty, for you know. Next thing, I got this ferocious dig in the shoulder, and a very angry voice, female, said, "That's my place." I looked at her and I said, "The church is empty. That is my place." I said, "Do you know who's there in the tabernacle?" I said, "Do you know the Lord is here?" And for the third time, very angrily, "That is my place." She was coming to Mass. I don't have to tell you, I got up. I went as far as possible away from her. I don't know what she felt when I got up to give the talk. But it was the attitude. I mean, you don't walk into a church in anger, demanding a particular spot. But we do, don't we? It's not the only place on the planet where I've had to shift. It was somebody else's place. And it's this thing that we demand to have certain things, and we say we're not attached to anything. But I know people in most parishes I have visited who are very attached to the particular place in the seat. And they haven't shifted out of that for 20 years. And if you try to shift them accidentally, have good life insurance. No, it's sad, because they say they're seeking God and they're not. That's why Jesus says, "What a mistake, what a blunder." I'm going to stop there. Do you see why these early volumes are really necessary for us to pick up on lots of stuff that we need to pick up on? That we're accidentally blocking the way. We don't mean to, but that's actually what we're doing. Yeah.